Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
This is Module 10, which is the development of ego, Talk 5. And the topic is the fourth skanda, which here is called intellect. It's been called formation, concept. And anyone who wants to give it other nasty names is welcome to. So we want everyone to be happy. So tonight we're not going to talk about freezing space and all that stuff that gets everyone worked up because none of us understand it. So we'll try to talk about what we do understand tonight. So instead of talking... Oh, okay. So I want to start with my favorite slogan, which is, you don't have to believe everything you think. I like that slogan because if you really understand it, which is very hard to understand, but if you really understand it, then you understand the skandhas and we don't have to do anything else. So you don't have to believe everything you think. So I'd like to start with the story of hijacking. You could call it derailing or whatever you want, but I like this image of hijacking. The hijacker is really quite deluded. He thinks he owns the plane that he's hijacking. He thinks he can control it. He thinks he can build it. He thinks he can put the fuel in it. And it's all a big delusion. And he thinks he can hijack it and take it to somewhere and then land it. And then either he likes where he's landed, or he doesn't, or he's landed in a terrible place, or he has no idea where he landed, because he's in a state of delusion. So then he has to invent more delusions to do something else the next moment. So that's sort of the story of hijacking. So since we don't understand when we're told about freezing space and all that kind of stuff, a lot of teachers have advised that we start with what we actually can experience. And we can experience something perhaps more than most people experience because we meditate. So when we meditate, what happens? We have a simple instruction, which is to follow the breath. First, of course, we sit in a good posture, and that helps tremendously. And we have some aspiration to actually work and do the practice. That doesn't mean we're going to do it perfectly, but it means we have an aspiration to do it. And that's sort of like clearing the ground and making a landing field. It doesn't guarantee that a plane's going to come in, but it helps a lot. And if there's no landing field, planes can't come in at all. So what happens when you meditate? We try to follow this instruction, and then we lose it, right? We go off somewhere. And going off somewhere means we believe in our thought. And that leads to the next thought, and it leads to the next thought. And we've lost it. We're in a state of delusion. So that's the matter of believing in the skanda process. And then all of a sudden, we're back. And when we're back, we're already back. It's not because we decided to come back. We can't decide to come back if we're off in a delusion. But some sort of grace, some sort of intelligence has already brought us back. So that's waking up and seeing that the skandhas are a thought. All of a sudden we know we haven't been there. So that's a matter of being deluded and coming back. So we all experience that. Is that clear?
Perfectly.
Okay. Okay. So if I'm talking too much with my own concepts, you can knock me on the head.
That's okay. We're happy we understand something.
At least we think we understand.
Right.
Well, it's familiar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what we're learning is that we really can't control our mind.
Right.
That thoughts come up. And what we've been trying to do here is to get everyone of us curious. Why do thoughts come up? And we don't know. But they can surprise us. Sometimes they're very boring stuff. Oh, I've got that again. We've all got our private baggage consisting of our hopes and our fears and our joys and our anticipations and our fantasies and our regrets and our desires. And then sometimes something comes up which we really don't understand at all. It surprises us. But something brings us back. And where is that something coming from? And the point of having some schema like the Skanda process is that we can start appreciating that it has to start before we know it's going to happen. Something has to happen before we have the thought full born, as, oh, that was a thought, or, oh, I believe that thought and off I go on it. It has to happen pretty damn quickly. That's why we say the Skanda process only takes a moment. And what we mean by a moment is that whatever is going on there is so fast that there's no way our mind can start to take it apart into pieces. Just like we have this little gadget here that can do millions of multiplications a second, but our mind can't take in a time period that short. We can't appreciate time as passing other than when we have a thought, a thought, a thought, a thought. So what's going on there? And that's what we need to get curious about. And there's no promise that if we work hard at it, we're going to slow our mind down to such a point that we say, oh, this is Skanda 1, this is Skanda 2, and so on. But clearly something is going on. And that's why I called it a hijacking, that something is taking over the mind. So unless we're clearly really psychotic people and we think that some alien from out there is speaking and making voices appear in our mind, something's going on before we know what's happening. You can stop me anytime you want to.
I can't believe that we're still following it.
We're still what?
We're still following along. We don't want to stop you.
Oh, okay.
We get it so far, I think.
Okay.
We're hoping.
So the stages so of this, yeah.
I'd like to quickly insert a question, maybe we can just go by it. And I understand this is a construct, you know, an aggregate. But I was thinking, what if something's a circle, or, you know, something cyclical? And there's nothing, there's no intelligence in it. It just comes around. What goes around comes around.
Yeah.
So could we appreciate that the skies are arbitrarily putting in intelligence where it doesn't have to be intelligent action? In other words, our thoughts, whatever is making up thinking, could just be a cyclical process going on. In other words, and we go off on a tangent, and we come back not because of some intelligence, but just because we're going in circles. That's the second expression.
Well, are we all that mechanical?
Well,
okay,
it could be a lot of
part. Okay, so sometimes that happens. That is, in fact, it happens a lot. That one thought, and then another thought, and another thought. But they do seem to be successive thoughts. That is, when if we're daydreaming, there's a thought, and then there's a thought, and then there's a thought, and we keep elaborating. We keep coming back and making a new thought, right? Or we wake up, and that's important too. That all of a sudden we know that that process is going on, and we see it. Is that different than what you're saying?
I know, except that you're saying there's intelligence to it. All I'm saying is it can work on its own.
Well, computers can work on their own.
Electrons go around.
Fields
go around. Electrons do.
It seems to me that there's more happening here. That there actually is enlightenment which is driving the whole thing. In fact, that's a very strong point that Trungpa Rinpoche makes in this book. And if we have time, I'd like to point out some of them to you, some of his comments on this. So, just to try to describe it, the first thing that happens we call form. And all that means is that there's a sense of self and other. And self and other has to be in our mind. A rock does not have this process going. It can't think, it doesn't have any sense of self and other.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I think I'm almost starting to understand form, which is probably means I'm not, but
that's okay.
But is the idea of form is that we notice something and we say, that's not part of me, that's over, is that where that ego piece is, that that's a sound and I didn't make it. Oh my goodness, how could that be?
Right. So it also happens in a dream, right? You could have a dream in which I hear a sound. Or we could have a dream in which this guy's chasing me, or I'm reaching out for this ice cream cone that I want. So if it's a dream, it's very clear that the self and other are both in the mind, right?
Right.
And that has to be true under all circumstances. That is, whether there's something out there, all we have to work on is our perception of it. So, self and other are arising in the mind. And the hijacking starts to come in. The hijacking is, instead of just letting our mind, our natural intelligence, do what it's going to do, we start to get, and I'm going to start to put my own names on this skandhas now, we get the second skandha, which we've called feeling, and I'm going to call it attitude. And you know what it means to have a pissy attitude. You could have a good attitude. You could have an indifferent attitude. So in the second skandha, it's not a matter of real emotions. I feel like this, I feel like that, and there's lots and lots of different emotions. It's something much more primitive of liking, disliking, or not caring. Pure prejudice. Probably, it's not even prejudice yet. It's an attitude. And furthermore, the attitude is totally fickle. It's not an aspect of some object. If the object, say, is a person you feel you love, then you're going to have an attitude of like. And at some other time, if that person says goodbye, I'm leaving you, we could really have an attitude of dislike. So it's not that, it's our attitude that we're talking about here. And we might not like the idea of being upset and angry. We might say, oh, I'm past that. Sour grapes. Okay, so now what kind of attitude do we get? Don't care, yeah. Okay, so our attitude is pretty fickle. And on the basis of that attitude, we're going to start building a prejudice, which is the third skandha. It's not actual, valid, genuine perception. It's, I've got all this baggage here that I'm carrying along. I'm going to reach into the baggage and I'm going to pull out some props about this person. I'm going to start dressing this person up. It doesn't have to be a person. It could be an idea. It could be emptiness. And this is, so emptiness is now a thing, and this is how I feel about emptiness. How I feel about this person. How I feel about a political party or a piece of cake. So this is starting to dress something up, and in some sense dressing up is already derailed, because the second skandha, the attitude we have, is going to determine whether we put nice clothes on this thing or evil looking messy clothes on this thing or clothes that are just put out of notice. So the skandhas have been translated as heat, and here we're saying the skandhas are heaped on top of each other. That happens. That language I got from Andrew Holacek, by the way. That is, there are successive stages of dressing something up. So now we've dressed something up a bit. It's going to turn out into an ugly, messy scarecrow, or a beautiful princess, or something by the side of the road that's fairly worth looking at, whatever it is. We're dressing something up. And we're reaching into our baggage, our suitcase of unresolved ideas from the past, attitudes, prejudices that haven't been worked out very thoroughly, things we don't really know what's in our mind. And that's what we're using to build the thing up.
So it's kind of like garbage.
Yeah, it's not without meaning in some sense, okay?
Right.
It has a lot to do with, our baggage. And there's a little bit of judgment about that, too, that our baggage is worthless. Maybe it isn't worthless. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's, there's actually wisdom in it, and that we can see at some point. So if we go along with this so far, we can ask ourselves not something about how did space freeze or so on, which we're not going to talk about, but
you keep saying that, but you're going to make us talk about it.
Is this sort of idea we're talking about here of successively building something up, is that consistent with things we can observe about how we behave, how other people behave, how political processes work, how institutional processes work? In other words, that a huge amount of dead wood and assumption is coming up all the time, and not really too much contact with reality. Do we see something like this happening? Are we kind of in the right track? Not that we can measure, but So we can see that this is a plausible thing. And we've got some evidence for it in the fact that it's so variable. Also, how many people remember talking about eight worldly concerns? No, okay, so we won't spend too much time on that, but it's a catalog of the content of ego mind. And the content of ego mind is always about me and something else. And it's about me and what I it's about me and my pleasure, or me and my pain. That's one of them.
Oh, they're like pain.
There are four pairs there, yeah. It's about me and someone I may feel. Well, it's about me and my I'm helping you get
here. You know, praise and blame.
Praise and blame is one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure and pain.
Pleasure and pain, you just said, yeah.
Good and bad?
No, it's not really good and bad.
Good and bad are judgments, okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In other words, I want to be praised. I don't want to be blamed. Okay? Or?
Fame and glory.
Fame
and okay.
And I'm not being known.
Yeah. In other words, being recognized and being obscure. And the fourth one would be gain and loss.
Yeah. Yeah.
How are my investments going to work out? So that's kind of a useful kind of catalog of how ego mind is always thinking about itself in relation to something. And we can see that these things always change too.
I wonder if I have an example of how I think this.
It would be good to have an example for
work.
Yeah.
It just occurs to me, I've been very disappointed at the way governors and senators have been responding to the Paris attack and their response specifically around immigration, right, and bringing Syrian refugees over. And I started accusing them of prejudice, not thinking. But I'm also aware that I left to the conclusion that we're prejudicing a whole group instead of treating people as individuals, which is one of my little, you know, household gods. So I know that I really want to hang on to that. So without knowing anything about the security protocol or screening or the process right now, I'm ticked off at all those people who are resisting allowing Syrian refugees in, because it somewhere in this process at about what? Perception. I recognize it as prejudice, a prejudice that I particularly dislike. And then I'm off. They're bad, they're stupid, they're politicians, they're, I can go on. But so without really thinking about any of that, I'm all the way down the road of they're wrong.
So your prejudice, and of course you can see it in others too, because what we can see in ourselves, we can see working in others. Sometimes we can even see it more easily in others.
I have an example too. I was thinking, Michael and I are taking a class on architecture in Boston, and the teacher mentioned something which I thought, wow, that's amazing. Faneuil Hall was the dock, that was the water, came right up there. And he said, well, they were trading slaves right there. I said, really? Why isn't there a plaque? You know, so just like you, it's sort of like then there became this huge thing in my mind, like, well, we should get a plaque. At least someone should know they were trading slaves here. Everyone wants to forget this. And then I talked to the ranger at the African meeting house, and he goes, no, they didn't trade slaves in Faneuil Hall, but there were some on the dock, yeah. And it's like, And then it's sort of like the whole thing gets bigger and bigger, and it's now all of a sudden a big project, and I want to do something. So isn't that the next part of this particular skanda? There's some sense of like adding it all up into something, and then there's some kind of karmic momentum that carries you forward.
Yeah, so we're sort of carrying into the fourth skanda now.
Oh, sorry, did I jump ahead?
No.
Oh, I thought that was the
topic. No, that's fine. It's always good. So, the fourth skanda is called, I've never seen it called intellect except here, and even Trungpa Rinpoche doesn't call it intellect. The usual name is formation, sometimes called concept. The Sanskrit word for it is samskara. Samskara.
Do you want to spell that for the tape?
Samskara. S-A-M-S-K-A-R-A.
Yeah.
Samskara.
That's not on there.
Oh, there it is.
Yeah,
oh,
it should be
Sanskrit.
There.
There it is. Yeah.
Sanskrit. Right. Okay.
Good point.
So, according to the traditional teachings of Abhidharma, there are 51 samskaras.
Okay. Take a deep breath.
Okay, here they are.
You'd match them up with the deck of cards, and you have one left over.
we can make a new game.
So it's a very traditional list, and when I post this, you'll see I'm giving you one link in case you want to go someplace where you can get a whole list of them, because Trungpa Rinpoche treats it a little casually here. And so among those, they come into groups, and one of the groups is actually, okay, samskaras are, he gives an explanation, they're they're mental formations, they're capabilities within the mind which work at different times in different ways and combine in different ways. They're basically building blocks for a big structure. A structure which can go out and find a case and make a case like a lawyer. We've got to put a lot of material together. So there is a lot of intellectual work going on. And one of the lists is virtuous thoughts, and there's said to be 11 virtuous thoughts. In this book he lists, he's wrong, he's at least careless, but faith, awareness, discipline, equanimity, absence of passion, absence of anger, absence of ignorance, humbleness, tendency to nonviolence, tendency or energy of effort or bravery. So he only listed 10, not 11, and he's got a little bit mixed up. But you can see that what they are tendencies in the mind, which could be very good, that they encourage us to be decent, ethical, and so on.
But it's funny because the examples John and Emily gave, like we think we're being virtuous,
right,
but that's our stuff.
Prejudice, really.
That's our stuff coming out there. Like, I'm going to fix this because those people are so wrong.
Yeah. Don't. Yeah.
Both examples.
Exactly. Okay. Let me go through three lists in just a few seconds, and then we'll put that together because that's a good point. So then there's a list of six egocentric thoughts: ignorance, passion, anger, pride, doubt, and dogmatism. Blah. Bad stuff. And there's a list of four which are called neutral. Surprisingly, one of them is slothfulness.
I like the sloth. I saw one.
Intellectual speculation, remorse, and knowing. Okay, that's a little... That's a strange little bundle. And then there are other categories, because there's 51 of them, and we've only covered a small number of them, and we're not going to cover more of them if you want to see a list of 51 you can.
We could spend 1 week
on each. Cover the
and take Thursday off. Thanksgiving off.
Right. By then everyone will be gone and we'd never have another ever.
Another sorry. No, sorry. We're going along. We're going back to this. Trungpa Rinpoche makes a point, and it's a very important point here, that every one of them is a mixed bag, and it matters how we use them. If we're going to be very virtuous and love someone, or be kind to someone, or be decent to someone, and we're doing it in an egotistical way, that is a delusion, and you notice it has no permanence. We've talked about different attitudes towards a lover, for example, and if your attitude and your working with someone is based upon what you expect to get, well, I'm a really loving person, but actually, I expect to be rewarded by love in return. No. Then that has no stability to it, because when someone else changes, that love collapses. So it's different than the actual non-egotistical use of components of our mind, which simply put, is not about me. So if there's genuine love, in which it has nothing to do with me or what I'm going to get out of it, that is enlightened mind. And Trungpa Rinpoche talks a lot about spiritual materialism. And that's the whole idea of spiritual materialism, is we could be religious for what we think we're going to get out of it. We could be loving for what we think we're going to get out of it. And all these things are extremely unstable, because if we don't get the payoff, our motivation changes damn quickly. So that's spiritual materialism, psychological materialism, in some cases just plain material materialism. I'm caring about this nest egg because I'm going to get paid off when it matures or whatever. So that kind of amounts in a way to the whole thing. So is everyone happy or unhappy or argumentative about what we're explaining so far?
You could also be indifferent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Are you indifferent?
I'm struggling more with, I'm starting to get the first three, but I'm still,
okay.
I'm not sure what the fourth one looks like. It's the fourth one, Emily wanting to put a plaque up at Samuel Hall.
Well, yeah, it has to progress, okay? It's not enough to have a prejudice. Basically, we're like a lawyer. This is like preparing our case.
Yeah.
Not only are we going to prepare our case, we're going to prepare what we're going to do about our case. We have to collect a lot of materials. We have to justify what we're doing. So if someone calls upon us, we should be able to say, well, my attitude towards that is well-founded, and here are my reasons.
Yeah.
So is it you have the prejudice.
Yeah.
And then you pull onto that this other stuff to keep it going, because that's how the ego knows. Like, that's how John knows he's right about this.
Yeah.
Because he knows all this.
Right. Yes.
By the time Emily gets around to wanting to put up a plaque, I mean, we're past the level of consciousness. We've done all five of those discoveries.
Well, not only that, but she's revolved it 10 times in her mind at least. Okay?
Right, but she's at least gotten part of it to consciousness, and then
going. Yeah, that is, this develops into consciousness. By the way, when you see consciousness in the fifth skanda, it always means it's used to mean a deluded consciousness, not enlightenment. That is, the fruition of the skanda process there is delusion, not enlightenment, unless we recognize it happening.
Are you saying that lawyers can't have a spiritual practice?
No, why would you have that?
Because you keep using the example of lawyers making a case.
Well, yeah, but we're all making a case. In other words, what I'm saying is that the fourth thing, what Elisa said, is that the fourth skanda is assembling a lot of material.
So you're also taking territory. It's sort of, you can think of it as expanding out into a territory. You know, for me, it could be one little idea there. I noticed something or I heard something. And then the next thing I know is I'm talking to the ranger down there to find out what they think. And then it doesn't agree with what I heard from the professor. And now I'm building my case. And then I want everyone to know this little fact. And then... So it gets bigger and bigger and bigger and more solid. That's the whole thing. It gets more solid. So it's me against history or what people don't know about history. So the ego, you can see how the ego expands there? I can feel myself rising up to this crusade.
So how could somebody have a crusade that is actually good for humanity and keep themselves bound and away from ego?
That has been done, and you can do it. And basically it means keeping the self out of it. Mm-hmm. That is, if there's a genuine passion which is independent of, which is not based on what I'm going to get out of it, then it's an enlightenment passion.
Or getting my way.
Getting my way, yeah.
Did you feel like you were trying to get your way?
Well, I haven't gotten that far, but it's all an idea. But yeah, I can feel the energy rising up. Yeah, it's not very kind, soft approach, you know.
It kind of reminds me of something that Malcolm Gladwell once said. One of his books, he made a point, and he referenced some sources on it. And then this other guy came along and ripped apart his book and said that his sources were inaccurate and just totally like took this concept and turned it on its ear. And the reporter went to Malcolm and he said, "What do you think about this guy?" Basically saying, "You're full of shit." And Malcolm said, "Hey, he's got a better idea that actually seems to make more sense. We need to listen to him." Mm-hmm. And he said, "I'm okay with being wrong. I'm just putting ideas out there. And if I'm wrong, that's pretty exciting that somebody else can show that." I just thought, wow, this guy really has his shit together. You know, he has no problem with being wrong. And everyone wanted to dig in and get him riled up. And he's like, "No, that's good. We're talking about it. We're learning."
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of, I mean, he wrote a book that made a difference for some people, but then, and so he had his little thing that he was putting out there, but then he didn't grab a hold of it and say, "This is mine, and it has to be right." And when someone came along and challenged it, he's like, "All right, let's look at that too."
So the intention, like your intention, you know, you want to have some sort of recognition for the slaves who went through what they did.
Right.
That's a good intention. So maybe the twist is, you know, you're getting worked up.
Yeah, well, clinging to that particular view and making sure everyone's going to agree with me, or, you know, like, it's sort of, it's twisted. It's not an open agenda. And it's not very receptive, but it's very aggressive, you know. So it doesn't. So the good example, this is an example of it. It's not whether something's good intention or bad intention, but you really look at this sense of adding on. It's like dressing up. Michael uses that a lot, you know. It's sort of adding fuel to the fire. And the fourth skanda seems to be always expanding territory and moving out. And there's it's a, seems like there's sort of a driving force there.
About me.
About me, yeah.
So with these skandhas, we're trying to protect, we're trying to insulate from the outside to protect ourselves, so that's why we try to keep this little space nice and safe here. Mm-hmm. And we don't, that way we're right.
Well, yeah. there's a me.
Right.
And then everybody else.
Right, there's a me. So I gotta protect me from them or the other.
Or I gotta seduce them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, Mary's question about Emily's wanting to put up the plaque and everything, what is not pure about it is that you're really going to reveal the badness of all the other people.
Yeah, exactly.
It's true. It's like she's
I want them to know.
Sure, everybody knows there were bad people here. So
not like
Emily's.
Yeah,
that's part. That's the part of it that is not the okay.
Well, also, you know, I want the ranger to say, "Well, wait, yeah, you're right. Yeah, there were actually slaves here, and they were trading in Faneuil Hall in the marketplace on the first floor." And you know, like now, I've got my agenda of making sure that it's going to be my way. And maybe who knows what the truth was. I mean, I don't even care about the truth anymore by that point. I've already made up my mind. So it's you could say, oh yeah, that's kind of a good, you know, when you care about something like that, that's good. But actually, this is where we're questioning good and bad altogether, you see. There's no ultimate good or ultimate bad. So it's really, it's whatever ego's trying to appropriate. You know?
Well, and our culture is filled with stories of holding on to your dream no matter what, and persevering against all odds, and not compromising. And it's like, wow. Okay. So, but there's success stories based on people build empires and build businesses because they persevere and crush their competition.
Correct.
Or that's who runs for president.
Right.
Yeah.
So the subject. Object is constantly changing. That is, it could be that the me side includes all my friends and allies against those terrorists out there. But then I realize that some of the people on my side really can't be trusted. So then we need to parse it in a new way so that those people who I really can't trust are not part of the us, they're part of the them. Or I could say it's about me and the pain I'm experiencing, but the pain is in my finger, so it could be about me and the finger, which is something kind of, I'm holding the finger apart. So there are many ways to parse self and other. And the thing is that none of them work. Ultimately, it doesn't make sense to parse the world into self and other. It's a delusion.
Yeah.
And the delusion collapses immediately. There's no, it can't stay around. So then we have to do it all over again.
But why does it collapse? It seems like it should just get
because,
stronger and stronger.
Well, yeah, because successive iterations can start to fixate, but the experience of me and other is all in the mind, so when that moment's over, we need to start rebuilding it again.
Does that make sense to people? Or does that seem really confusing?
Yeah.
So it says that whose other is constantly changing, and
yeah.
Then
right.
Where's my boundary if the other?
We can never set the boundary in a satisfactory way.
Right. It never works.
It never works to
Sure?
I'm not sure. Well, let's see.
Well, it's always changing.
You could, yeah, you're talking about someone could fixate about an enemy and it could go on for years, right? At the cost of ignoring things going on in one's own mind, I would say. In other words, the person doing that is going to become stupider and narrower and narrower and narrower. And you know that that happens with people who have held on to a revenge for 10 years. That they that they start to fail, their whole world becomes diluted.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
that's a good example. It becomes more black and white.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. A little black and white version of the world, it becomes more and more shrunken.
Talking about black and white, so by pausing things or freezing time as you were not talking about it. But it's like for that instant, that pause, that things are like, you know, the Wizard of Oz, it comes in color. You know, it's black and white and then it pops in color.
I'm not sure what you're trying to point
out. No, I'm just trying to think of, you know, like black and white, and, you know, and that when we get into, you know, with this little cycle or whatever we go through with about our ego and being right and everything, the us, self and other and all that, that's really deluding us and keeping us from really experiencing the world as it is and seeing it in black and white terms opposed to
all in
color.
A
full version.
Yeah.
Yeah, it narrows down the world totally.
Right, so a very important point here is that the fourth skanda takes a tremendous amount of energy. It takes a lot of energy to reinvent ourselves every instant. Mm-hmm. And when we can start to see through that, it liberates our energy. Mm-hmm. That is, we're not compelled to keep endlessly reinventing. Reinventing is painful. And our culture keeps telling us we should reinvent, but reinventing every fraction of a second is kind of pretty painful. And we don't see that as painful because we're so used to it. We don't have a glimpse of what it would be like to just relax and let it be. Maybe we do when we meditate. We come back and we just hear, and there's no obligation to believe your thought. So we start to get little touches of liberation, not by understanding some theory, but by actually doing the practice. And 2 weeks from now, Emily's going to give a talk on meditation, because that happens to be the next chapter. And so we want to keep it very experiential, and so does Trungpa in his book. If you have the book and you read some of it, you'll see constantly he's saying, rather than being theoretical and trying to grab some intellectual understanding of this, we need to see that it's in the details of what we actually experience is the only place we're going to have liberation. So it's a constant process of being simple.
So the experience is a loss of thinking. You know, reduction.
It's easing up on the conceptual thinking of continually having a story about me.
It's ego mind, right?
Yeah. It's meditation is going beyond ego mind,
right.
And we experience, because we're not great enlightened beings, we experience losing it and coming back. We're flickering all the time, and that can make our practice frustrating, but it can also start to liberate us.
And I thought about this. I really like Holochek's reading here, and it occurred to me after reading it the other night that after all this time, it's my ego that's been doing all the meditating.
Yeah.
And I just never occurred to me. I never thought of it. And sometimes I'll even say, I'm really glad I'm sitting down to meditate. And it's probably my ego saying, oh, now you're going to pay attention to me, and I'm going to think a lot, and there are going to be all these thoughts. And it's, so I see this separation now very much more clearly, I think. Is that
Yeah, he's a wonderful teacher, and he doesn't hesitate to bring in far different materials that are not conventionally Tibetan ones. And how he goes about teaching. He's a great teacher.
So if you say, if you sit down and go, I have a goal. So this is, coming back to John's always, John's questions all the time. So, you know, that holding on to a goal, I'm going to get somewhere.
I'm going to meditate.
I'm going
to ego.
Right there, yeah.
Just, that's what I need.
That's it.
All this time.
So it's very interesting because we start, we all start from wanting something and thinking there is a goal and there's somewhere to go to, but ultimately it's letting go of the ego and realizing there's just sitting down and coming back to the this open space.
That's right, that's it.
You know, we think, oh, this is going to be great, you know, enlightenment or whatever, but this is what Pema Chodron talks about, the rug being pulled out.
Yeah.
And it's that sense of, we think about the rug being pulled out. What happens? You know, like, you're kind of thrown up in the air. You have no idea kind of where you land. So it's groundless. And that, you know, we are working right now on looking at the development of ego so we can understand what non-ego and non-self is. And the further aspect of that is emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more deconstruction. I mean, it's a deconstruction project. And it's, yeah, it becomes more and more groundless because there's not as many reference points to hold on to.
So it's coming kind of a building and you're demolishing it.
Yeah.
Taking it apart.
Yeah, I mean, people said to me, oh, you did all that meditation. You did a 3-year retreat. That's amazing. What did you get out of it? It's not what I got, it's what I lost. And you get a very strange look at that point. But it's taking apart your concepts, you know.
Yeah.
Your whole, the whole structure starts to fall down. It doesn't mean I didn't build, you know, I don't constantly build it up again. I mean, I do that like everybody, but that sense of deconstructing the project, when you sit down on the cushion, that's what you're doing. You're working on deconstructing ego. And every time you let go of a thought and come back, then you're allowing yourself to actually let go of that solidification.
Sometimes it's your ego tricking you into
that. Oh, yeah.
No, that's
Ego has, that's it. Ego always wants to assume the guise of enlightenment.
Yeah, right. This will be good for you. Watch out for that one.
So you don't have to believe everything you think. And you can look at this on the web if you want, but there's one point in the book where a student asks a question and that kind of spills the beans. The student says, he says on page 36 it is, the question comes, so that the awakened state of mind is actually doing all the work that everything else is living on. And Trungpa Rinpoche says. Exactly. I mean, even uprising, agitation, aspects of living in the samsaric world, like guerrilla warfare and political intrigues and everything, all are based on the fundamental sense that something is not right. And seeing that something is not right is based on intelligence. So, the entire process of skanda formation doesn't have any energy. It's just the energy of our enlightened mind that's doing it. The enlightened mind has never left us. It alone has the energy to build skandhas, to create illusory worlds, to create pain and pleasure, to do everything. Yeah.
Is this reading we're supposed to do other than the chapter intellect?
I think that I'm on page 36 there. I think it came earlier. But I'm going to put this on the website so you can look at all of that. But that particular one is, to me, the confirmation that saying that there's a hijacking makes sense. That it's a pure phantom riding on its own, has no intelligence of its
own.
It's
a different edition.
It's a different edition, because it's not on page 36.
Oh, no. It's not on 36 here, is it? I don't see it. That's perception. Is it under perception?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Okay,
it
so...
Okay,
under okay so I put some photocopies here, so if you want to look at some of those things, they're there.
Okay.
And then I also suggested looking at the Heart Sutra. Everyone remembers that? Therefore, how does that go? Whoever wants to.
I actually listened to the Dalai Lama and answered in Tibetan, but that doesn't help.
No. Anyway, I put a clip on that. But you have our translation of the Heart Sutra in the chant book, which is on the website too.
That's
yeah, form is emptiness. Emptiness is no other than form. Form is no other than emptiness, and so on. In the same way, feeling, perception, concept, and consciousness are emptiness. That's
yeah.
The Heart Sutra.
That's
going to
make me crazy.
Did you say sleepy?
Crazy.
Oh, crazy. Therefore, since there is no concept, there is no fear. Go later on, and it says there's no fear because we aren't depending on any conceptual mind.
That's on the website under.
It's
chant book.
It's instruction. I think is the main tab for that instruction, and it's
chants and songs.
Chants and songs.
Yeah, and then there's a chant book which has a bunch of chants, which
we'll be getting more into that later on.
I'm just curious. The thing that comes to mind when you talk about the awakened intelligence that you're just referring to. So the way I understand that then is that the work of taking apart the ego is really a certain kind of relaxing.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
Letting go.
Yeah, you can't stamp it out.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be trying to stamp it out. And it's not a matter of stamping out. When you come back, you just see that it's a thought.
Right.
It's seeing through it. It's seeing the illusory quality. It's not the putting it in a trash can and sending it out to the compactor.
Well, then the other aspect of this is not trying to get rid of anything. So it's actually, we'll talk more about that, it is actually the stuff of wisdom right there.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So you're not trying to stamp it out, but you actually are recognizing the confusion is wisdom.
So grant you blessings so that
confusion
may
dawn
as wisdom. That's the fourth line.
Yeah. So that's what we're working with here.
Well, thank you, everyone.